All right, everybody, welcome to our October Maximum Impact Conference call. Thanks, everybody, so much for making it. We've got a lot of folks on the line today. I'm very happy about that. We have three big objectives to accomplish today, and I'm very excited. We're going to have a couple of special guests with us on the line as well. But October always brings to us, October and the fall season brings some significant opportunities that in many schools, in many parts of the country are significantly overlooked and significantly under-leveraged, right? And if you know anything about us, the club that you are a part of, the culture that you're a member of now, is really all about leverage. It's all about maximizing opportunities, right? Far more frequently, we find schools who have opportunity staring them in the face that is simply gone unleveraged, unmaximized, more so than we do schools that have some other fundamental flaw. Does that make sense? So in most cases, tripling your marketing results isn't the best solution for your school. Instead, it's maximizing the leads that you're already getting, maximizing the enrollments you're already getting, maximizing the intros that you're already getting. In most cases, that's a much, much more profitable strategy. And, you know, our industry falls victim to the bright, shiny object syndrome very dramatically, looking for the next program, the next curriculum, the next piece of software, the next fancy website, the next thing that they think they might use to generate more students, when in many, if not most cases, it's about maximizing and leveraging what you already have. Is a much better and first step, a much better first step. So today we're talking about opportunities that occur during this season that in many cases go unleveraged and missed by much larger school operators. So today we're talking a lot about marketing, so I'm excited about that. We'll have a couple of special guests joining us in just a few minutes. We'll have Grandmaster Stephen Oliver, NAMA CEO, joining us. And we'll also have one of Grandmaster Oliver's franchise owners, Sasha Williams, Professor Sasha Williams, joining us from Fresno, California, who had some tremendous results last month with some interesting marketing strategies that I wanted to sort of reveal to everybody and kind of give everybody the what's working today in the field perspective. He generated 120-something intros last month. So, and we'll describe why that's so significant in his market, in his business, in just a few moments. So, while we're waiting for Professor Williams, let me give you just three quick items. Number one is a housekeeping item for everyone on the call who is in our Peak Performer and Inner Circle groups. Please do not forget that our fall Black Belt Retreat / Mastermind meeting is coming up in Keystone, Colorado, November 3rd and 4th. Now, what this is this. As you all know, I'm a very big fan of the Mastermind principle, and in fact, an ardent believer and one of the most impactful experiences that ever happened in my life was Grandmaster Oliver, as you know, was part of Dan Kennedy's Platinum Mastermind group for years and years, and I was blessed and fortunate enough that he has the vision to make sure that his team members, to make sure that the people that he helps to mentor were part of that. And I had the blessing and the opportunity to be part of that group, you know, to sit in the corner and be experience that mastermind process at work at a very, very, very high level for a number of years. And imagine being in a business, any business, in the restaurant business, in the chiropractic business, in the martial arts business, you name it, whatever business, and you take two full days out of your schedule and you travel to a city, lock yourself in the room with 35 or 40 folks, smart, sophisticated, honest, ethical, sharp people in the same business that you are that have maybe 2, 5, 10, 20 times the results that you're having, right? In this platinum environment, we were in the room with people from 35 different niches, all of which who were operating businesses just like what NAMA does for different industries. I think the highest revenue person in the room was Ron LeGrand, who was right around $110 million a year. So think about that. You're surrounded by 35 or 40 other people who are on the same journey that you are, who are in the same business that you're in, who are having the same challenges that you're having, overcoming the same obstacles, encountering the same resistance, having the same self-doubts, right, that you're having, and have gone through that and are going through it currently, and they come together and help each other with their businesses. So for all of our Peak Performers Inner Circle members, that's coming up for you November 3rd and 4th out in Keystone, Colorado. So this, again, is our opportunity to lock the door, turn off the cell phones, close the computers, work on your business rather than being sort of relegated to working in your business 100 hours a week, right? So this is you know, an immense opportunity. I'm really excited. Just make sure everybody, all of you guys, get your hotels and everything booked already. All the information is up on the members' website. If you log into the members' homepage, the first slide that you'll see is about the Black Belt Retreat, the Inner Circle Mastermind Retreat. Click that, get yourself all set up for it, and I'm really excited to see everybody there. We've got lots of new members that are coming out, lots of very high-performing schools, and, in fact, even a couple of alumni members that will be rejoining us out in Colorado. So, again, an immense experience. If you're not currently part of that program, this is really something you should think about. You know, again, the power of surrounding yourself with other people on the same journey and who are going through what you're going through, the ability to shorten your learning curve is immense in this environment. So, you know, click on that post on the member site, check it out, and if you have any questions at all, call Bob at the office, 727-540-0500, extension 202, and he can handle any questions you may have about that. Second item while we're waiting for Professor Williams to join us is Master Oliver has blocked out some days and times over the next couple of weeks before we're back on the road with our Extreme Success Academy World Tour, the Toronto stop. We have a couple of week gap between now and Toronto. And he's, I guess, kind of volunteered. I guess maybe we kind of volunteered him. But he's blocked out some time to do one-on-one progress checks with all of our members. So if you're stuck, right? If you're in your school and you have a specific question, a specific plateau you're having trouble breaking through, if there's specific direction and guidance that you'd like to accomplish, this is a great opportunity for you. And in fact, regardless of what stage your school is in, this is a place for you to get some perspective outside of yourself, right? Somewhere that, you know, having an objective person who's not, you know, you've always heard the expression, you can't see the forest for the trees, right? Having someone with a helicopter while you're stuck in the middle of the forest is very useful, right? Someone who's kind of been through what you've been through and has navigated the woods many times is a very useful experience. So in order to take advantage of that, it's very simple. All you have to do is go to natma.com/private coaching session. Now, it's kind of a long URL, but it's natma.com/private coaching session. And just fill out the form on the page. There's a couple of forms that you have to go through. And you'll set up a time immediately with Bob to block that out with Master Oliver, and he'll spend that 30 minutes with you. Obviously, as you know, typically his rate is $1,297 an hour. He's foregoing all that. What we really want to do is help our members break through their plateaus. It's been a tough economy. A lot of schools are really struggling, but a lot of schools that we work with are doing great. They're having record numbers, and we really want to help dig through whatever obstacle you may be having and show you what's working, right, in real time. And it's very effective to be able to do that with someone directly, right, instead of trying to glean it from, you know, the latest CD or call or whatever. It's very useful to get that specific question about your specific market, your specific style, your specific curriculum, and how to break through that plateau. So that was my last housekeeping item. Oh, you're both here. Okay, good. Well, then, Master Oliver, before we transition to Professor Williams, let me give everybody grab a pen and paper, and I want to give you kind of rapid fire quickly three things that you need to be doing right now in today's, you know, season for your front-end marketing strategies. And I know Professor Williams is going to go through his great results from the last couple of months and sort of reveal to you what's been working in his environment, in fact, in a very challenging environment, which I think is going to be an interesting conversation for everybody. Right now, again, you guys all know my story. You want to be like a bear, right? And there are two different types of bears. You know, the one bear isn't afraid. And when the salmon are swimming upstream, he tromps out into the middle of the stream and stands waist deep in the water and grabs all the salmon that he wants to eat, right? But then there's another kind of bear who's a little bit afraid to get his paws wet, and he kind of stands on the shore. And sure, occasionally a sickly, thin salmon swims by, and he can grab him. But what you really want to do is go get in the middle of the stream, right? You want to go stand where the stream is the strongest current and catch as many salmon as you can catch, right? Get in front of the herd. Get in front of where the herd is running. So right now you should think about the fall, Halloween, seasons, holidays, and business-to-business promotions that are going to have a huge influx of your perfect customer, your ideal customer, this month or over the next 6 weeks. Here are just three quick examples before we hear from Professor Williams and Mr. Oliver. Think about where thousands of families will be congregating or streaming through a bottleneck over the next couple of months. Right now, almost every elementary school in your area, almost every community agency in your area will be having some kind of fall festivals, right? And this is partially what Professor Williams will be talking about today. But right now, go Google your community's fall festivals, harvest festivals, Halloween haunted houses, elementary schools who are going to have their fall carnival or their fall fundraisers, whatever that may be. Almost every youth group around you will be having some activity for Halloween, right? And you all know by now how to leverage that, and we're going to talk about that a lot today. But Google that right now. Go make a map. Go find out who the facilitator is for all of these events, and go get involved, right? Figure out how you can get them to hand passes out for you. Figure out how you can get in front of their locations when they're at their peak, those types of things. Let me give you two versions of that, I think, that are the most useful before we transition. Number one is I'm a big proponent of business-to-business joint ventures. I guess maybe it's part of my brain chemistry. I like to talk to and work with other business owners, right? So I'll go and find all the businesses who are going to have a big influx of my family customers over Halloween. So to me, the two obvious ones are all of the Halloween costume shops that pop up in the empty big box stores that all of us have in our towns, right? You know, there's an empty Kmart building somewhere or a Best Buy building somewhere or something like that. And for about 6 weeks or 8 weeks, a new store pops up in there, and it's the 4th of July fireworks guy in July, and it's the Halloween costume shop in October, and it's the Christmas place in December, right? So go do a deal with that guy, right? He's going to have thousands of your prospective families as customers over the next 6 weeks, you know, and now I guess it's over the next 4 weeks. And my strategy for that always was meeting with the owner, and, you know, if you consider his average transaction size, and this goes for all of the local pumpkin vendors as well, right? I mean, they're all going to have all of your local churches, all of the local, in a lot of cases, I guess, maybe there are a lot of them are church organizations. But, you know, there's local pumpkin patches all over the place. And, again, same model. There will be thousands of your prospective customers going through their doors over the next 4 weeks. And if you take the pumpkin vendor, for example, his typical transaction size is, I don't know, $3 or $4 for a pumpkin, right? So I would go in and do a joint venture with the guy and say, listen, you know, here are my ad cards, which you can go get off the print-on-demand thing in your member section, right? Here are little ad cards with your affiliate code at the bottom. Here's what I'd like you to do. Just hand this to every customer who buys a pumpkin from you and read this one line. And I'd give them 3x5 index cards with the script on it. And the script says this, very simply. Hey, I see you have a son or a daughter. Have you ever heard of XYZ Karate? And no matter what the customer says, they hand them the little ad card and say, hey, they do great work with children and families over there. You should check them out. And they just hand them the card, right? I mean, you can get out probably 30,000 of these ad cards, you know, in the next 4 weeks for $0, right? I mean, I think you can buy 5,000 of these ad cards for maybe $200, right? I mean, they're infinitely cheap. And what I always do is incent the business with money, right, or referrals. So I would say, well, look, you're selling pumpkins for $3 to $12. Hand these cards out to everybody. Anybody who brings in a card with your affiliate code on it and enrolls, I'll give you $100 or $200, right? I mean, how enthusiastic is he going to be about promoting your business if his average transaction size is $6, but you're going to give him $100 if anybody does the thing, right? The second piece of that, and we've got to transition. The second piece of that very quickly, I think, is you also have leverage with your customer base, your students, with that business owner as well. So you can go to that local pumpkin patch vendor and say, hey, listen, I'd love to do this with you. How can we help each other? How can I help you? Well, hey, listen, I've got 200 families. Why don't you give me some kind of a flyer or some kind of a thing that I can give all my people and they can come here to buy their pumpkins? Would that work for you? You know? And he says, well, sure it will. Okay, great. Well, how do you think we can work together? Hey, do you think you could pass these out for me? You know, that sort of thing. So it's always about what's in it for them, and we've gone through that, I think, ad nauseum in the past. So I think overarching, Google all of the fall festivals you're going to be having in your area. Every elementary school is going to be having them. Call every elementary school in your area. Local pumpkin patch vendor, local costume shops, anybody who's going to have a big influx of your perfect customer over the next 5 weeks. So that's my list. Right? So in 6 minutes or less, that was what I would do in October to get, you know, my 25, 30 enrollments this month. And so with that, we will transition. Grandmaster Oliver is on the line with us. Master Oliver, are you there?
I am here.
Okay,
and
fantastic.
We have, Professor Williams here as well.
I'm not seeing him. I Professor Williams, oh, there he is. Professor Williams, you may have to hit *6 on your phone to be unmuted. I'm not seeing his hand up yet. Master Oliver, while Professor Williams is getting himself unmuted, anything you'd expand on those three items?
Well, yeah, and Professor Williams,
yeah.
Are you there?
Sure. This is for me, Eric? Hello?
No.
Different Williams.
Sasha Williams.
Oh.
Sasha Williams.
All right, fine, no problem.
But I hate to interrupt, but Eric, is professor your correct term for the book? You're the only person I don't have a title in front of. What title is the most appropriate for you, Eric? Now he's muted again.
Yeah.
Okay, never mind. Eric, email it to me.
Okay. Well, let me we're having trouble having Sasha say something so we know you're here.
Mr. Oliver, what would his area code be?
It's Fresno, so 516, I think.
It's a big list. I don't know if I'll be able to look at it quickly.
Well, that's okay. Let me. I'll three way and get him into the. He's 559-367-2776.
I'm not seeing him.
Okay.
Well, anyway,
we now have Professor Williams unmuted, so we're in good shape. And to transition here, Toby, and you asked me a couple questions. One is, I would remind everybody that we want these calls to be highly interactive. And there's three ways to ask questions on the calls, because I don't know, I'm perplexed that so many martial artists are shy. But one is to ask them live in the call, and we almost always set aside some time for open Q&A, so please do that. Way number two is ahead of the call on, you know, Tuesday or the morning of or whatever, email me questions, and I always look at those, and we will make every effort to interact with them. And the third is actively participate in the discussion board. And many times we'll pull those questions off as well for the calls. But the point of the call is to be highly interactive with all the members who participate. And we have, as Master Miller was saying, an awful lot of people on the call today, but we want your specific questions, especially to the point that it's a similar question that everybody else would have to be answered. The second thing, Toby, is I want to reemphasize, I have set aside the next 3 weeks slots to do personal evaluations with every member who's not a peak performer or inner circle member. Of course, with those members, we already have them on our one-on-one coaching and in our small group meeting schedule. And Bob is on the line here. Bob, can you say hi? Mute delay again. But we have Bob Dunn on the line. The problem that Bob has had in the last 3 days is we've got so many members that are trying to get in and slot those times, and as you know, really what I'm doing is I'm setting aside most of 3 days a week to do back-to-back, you know, 30-minute consultations. And I think what everybody who's done it so far will admit that, one, I don't mince any, you know, pull any punches, but two is oftentimes we find a huge amount of missing revenue, and typically some things that the school owner themselves wouldn't see. And I think that's just as true for a school owner that's doing $100,000 a year as it is for one that's doing $100,000 a month. And so it's very, very valuable, and valuable for no other reason than just the number of people I've dealt with, the commonalities between the successful ones, the commonalities between the failures, and the ability to see that. So anyone on the call who has not scheduled that time is either go to that website, nabma.com, private coaching session, and opt in, or just call Bob directly at the office, 727-540-0500, extension 202, and get on that schedule. But, Toby, let's transition here to Professor Williams for a second. And let me Professor, correct me if I misstate anything, but it's not so much that Professor Williams in Fresno has had a lot of intros last month. In fact, last month was probably one of the slower months of the year for them. But, Professor Williams, we were talking about just an event you did last weekend. Tell us about last weekend. You got, what was it, 96 appointments in a couple of days last weekend?
Yeah, it was 98 appointments, actually.
Okay. Now, this is not for everybody's, and it may be to emphasize something you said a minute ago, Toby, is it's really nice to pass out 5,000, 10,000, 11,000 flyers. Relatively ineffective, because most of them don't make them home, and most of them don't make it to the refrigerator magnet, and most of them don't make it to somebody calling from there. And for the expense, it's useful to get, you know, you get that stuff out, but it's not terribly, you know, productive from a standpoint of immediately driving tons of intros. The next thing is we talk a lot about leads, and we'll define a lead as you've got a name, address, a phone number, an email address, and the next big thing that we're launching for all the NAPMA members is broadcast text messaging. But really, I mean, if you have a phone number, you can end up in phone tag hell for quite a while before you get hold of a person. And if you have a name and an address, oftentimes you have to spend, you know, $10-$15 per lead in direct mail to finally get them to respond. I mean, hell, as everybody on the call should know, we're spending a fortune on direct mail and on live person answering the phone just to get what we're hoping to be 100% of the members to do a free consulting call to help them out to grow their business. And so it takes a Herculean effort. And again, I'll remind everybody, you know, call Bob as soon as this call's over to get that time slot, because I'm not setting aside unlimited time to do it. But the what Professor Williams just said is he made 98 appointments, meaning name, address, phone number, email address, specific time committed to attend the school to come in for an intro lesson. Now, Professor Williams, give us a sense of what the year has looked like so far on a typical month, peak month. What kind of appointment flow and intro flow have you been managing?
Well, let me lead this off by saying this is, we have a whole family of black belts. So it's me and my wife and two of our kids working actively in the third year. And also, while she is going to be helping out whenever she can, right?
Yes.
And we have a couple of extra people on staff. So that's why the number is going to be maybe higher than if you have a one-man show, which I used to do. Up until about 5 or 6 years ago, it used to be just me, right? And so I can relate to a lot of people that might be in a similar situation.
Let me qualify what you just said for a second. Is the only reason anybody is ever a one-man show is because they chose to be. And it's some people end up in what they perceive to be a catch-22. And they'll say to me, well, the school's not grossing anything, so I can't afford to hire anybody. Well, that's a logical statement. On the other hand, the flip side of that logical statement is if you don't have support staff and you don't have the ability to market and teach classes at the same time and sell at the same time, you're never going to have any money. And go all the way back to 1983 when I moved to Denver, I was flat broke and started with myself and two other people full-time running the school. And in about 4 weeks, had 100 active students and 20,000 a month gross. And within 18 months, had 5 schools with, I think it was 15 staff, grossing $1 million a year. So don't anybody use the excuse, well, I can't go out and do promotional marketing activities because I don't have anybody help me with it. Well, I hear two things, and I've talked to over 200 people one-on-one between these seminars and our member conversations. But I hear two things constantly, which is just a moron alert. Moron alert number one is my biggest problem is I don't have enough new students coming in. My question is, what are you doing to market? And the answer is nothing. Well, if you're telling me you're doing 30 different things, you're not having enough people coming in, then you've got a valid concern. You're telling me you're sitting on your ass all day not doing anything and occasionally buying a money mailer and are concerned because you don't have enough intro traffic because enough people aren't stumbling in the door, that just means, it's a stupid thing to say. The other thing I hear a lot is, well, I can't do this stuff because I don't have any staff. And, of course, the question is, what are you doing to develop staff from within? What are you doing to recruit staff? What are you doing to develop people in leadership roles that can help on the floor? What are you doing to create a parent support team that will help you with administrative stuff? What are you doing to recruit and hire a fabulous full-time person to help you grow the school? And, of course, usually the answer to each of those things is nothing. So all businesses have the same problem, by the way, is they have their biggest problem, let's say it's marketing, their second biggest problem, let's say it's staff. And they go to work working on issue number 12 rather than go to work on number 1 and 2. But is that a fair thing to say, Master Professor Williams?
Oh, absolutely. There's just no way I could have had these numbers if I didn't have people to help out with. And also one thing that's really easy to forget about, I mean, Toby was bringing us the whole idea of a mastermind program here, which I cannot agree with more. And most of you guys, the fact that you are on this call right now already is almost proof that the mastermind principle works. I mean, what would you be doing right now if you went out on this call? Right? It would probably not be quite as productive or not quite as conducive towards improving your school. You know, we always fall into the trap of working in the business instead of on the business, right? And the other aspect of having a really good staff is that you're going to be noticing that every staff member has certain talents that they can really bring to the table. I had no idea that my wife was one of the best marketing people in the world, so I'm just letting her go with it, right? I didn't know that my kids are adults now would be such fantastic instructors and would want to do that, right? So you find more and more gems in your staff, and it all started with a student who was an orange belt once, and wanted to help out a little bit, and now it's years later, and they're one of your top black belts, helping you run the school. Yes, and I know that that's really more of a subject for a different NAMA call, but building up that bench strength is absolutely essential. And it really leads to the ability to build up a very large school that then starts almost running itself after a while because there's so many people participating.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, Professor Waves, you know, one of the advantages you had is you came up through as a NAPNA member, then you came up through as a peak performer member, and then moved over onto the franchise side, and have been on the franchise side now for a couple of years. But let's give people very specific actionable ideas here. And let's go back to the other question. What's the year looked like from a standpoint of generating leads and generating intros? Or appointments and intros on an average month. Walk us back the last 4, 5, 6 months and what that's been looking like. You there? Professor? That's interesting. Toby, can you? Okay, there you go.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, can now.
Okay.
Walk us back what that looked like the last few months.
All right. So now to start with, we get about an average of about 200 appointments a month. Okay? Now keep in mind that these are people that we are contacting. They did not initiate the contact. In addition to that, we also get, I have a lot of online contacts. We have a parent magazine. We have a couple of other types of advertising, and we have a very good location, so we always get some, people that are raising their hand before we even know about them, and they contact us. But that's in, maybe the 10 or 20 range, right? So we get, on top of that, with all the events that we're doing, we get about an average of about 200 appointments a month. Not 200 leads, 200, right? And now keep in mind also that we don't charge a small fee. Being a Mile High Karate franchise, we charge $200 a month just for a beginning basic program. So, and being in Fresno, it's, there's another thing that a mistake that sometimes people make being on a call like this. You might, inadvertently make the excuse, oh, yeah, it works over there, but I can't do that in my city. Well, Fresno has a median annual income of something around $45,000, and it has an unemployment rate of about 16% or so. And it's pretty dismal over here. There isn't a month that goes by without somebody losing their job around here, and this is like one of my good people, right? Somebody's committed to back though. So we had to contend with all of that as much, if not even more so, than most other cities in the country, right? So we have a relatively high number of appointments in order to weed through all the people because, obviously you're going to get some good ones and some bad ones, right? Mm-hmm. But this was really facilitated by doing a lot of work with events. We did everything from working in the movie theater, and we paid for that, by the way. We went to a National CineMedia and paid for movie theater tabling so we could be there when the big movies, the summer family movies came out. And it would be typical large event, something like a fair. And if you're in a, city of, let's say, 100,000 people or more, you probably won't even know what are all the events that are going on. There's probably a lot of them that you never even realized existed.
Let me hone you in a little bit, Professor. Let's start with one of the things that was seasonal a little bit. On a movie theater with Kung Fu Panda, what kind of appointments and leads did you generate this summer?
Going back by just memory right now, I would say
round numbers. We're not going to hold you to it. I may have lost you again. Are you there? Professor?
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. So we're talking at about 180 appointments. I mean, excuse me, 100 appointments, spending from about 180 leads or so in a weekend.
Right? Okay.
And then, of course, since these people are not, raising their hand, we are contacting them, essentially. We have them come by our booth. They don't all show up, right? actually. You might get about 50% going up, and you keep on working the rest of it.
Yeah, but before we go there, let's walk through the let's walk through the type of events and what the typical ratio is going to be. So you said Kung Fu Panda in a weekend you made, let's say, 100 appointments, a total of 100 leads, meaning you got 80 leads on top of that, or 180 leads on top of that?
No, about 80 leads on top of that, 180.
Right. Total. Right. So you're at least half the people you're interacting with, you're getting an appointment. And
about
so let's
50%.
Yeah, let's walk through some of the other events that have been useful. I know that, that one of the ones I heard that was kind of out of the blue was you did a home show. So tell us about I don't know if you've done several of them now, but tell us about the home show results.
Yeah, we did a couple of them. And these are typical, you know, like home and garden shows where they sell, you know, anything from tile flooring and different roofing and swimming pools and that kind of stuff. And so, and in Fresno, we have a relatively large one. It's, you know, hey, I don't know how many vendors there are, but there's like two or three big buildings. And we have three of those shows per year. And just imagine right in the middle of all of that, there's a little karate booth, and we easily make somewhere around 50 appointments in a weekend. So, you know, it's usually like a three-day weekend. And
okay.
I mean, you might not imagine that that would be a good place, but it's a fantastic place because there's people there that have money and they have kids and they want to spend their money. So, and don't forget that they are often, they have their child with them, and the child isn't going to get too excited about all the stuff going on at the home show. So it's a welcome little break in that whole day. So it's really a good fit.
Yeah. Are you on a speakerphone or are you on a handset?
Well, I wasn't speaking there for a moment, but it didn't work too well.
No, that doesn't. If you could
okay.
be on a handset or a headset, that'd be great.
Okay,
much better. And then you've been doing a lot of fairs and carnivals. So let's do a rundown of the different types of events that have been very successful.
I would say at the top of the list would definitely be the movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a couple of events that I guess you can liken them to a fair. You know, we have like a kids' fest we just did, for example, at the zoo, the local zoo here lets people come in and do like, even do Halloween, they're going to have stuff like that. You know, they either have everybody coming in costumes. This time it was actually a children's health fair. And
mm-hmm.
We have a couple of larger events that are really almost the same thing as a small fair. Right? A bunch of vendors. Some food vendors, lots of arts and crafty kind of stuff, usually a small children's, you know, carnival section with a carousel, something like that, right?
Yeah.
And we've actually been surprised about how many of those exist. And those will be the larger events.
Okay.
And definitely I would say that the movie theater ranks there at the top when there's good summer movies coming out, like with the Kung Fu Panda, for example. That
sure.
will always be the case, of course.
Things we could do in September and then now October. What are some of the things that are going on in Fresno that you've been finding?
Okay, well, we're still working farmers markets because they're still going to go for another month. And they're not too large, but you might usually get between 5 and 10 appointments and within a couple hours there, right?
Yeah.
But now we've got a lot of events that are all, first of all, there are the ones that are not related to Halloween yet, which is really all the school carnivals. And they're pretty easy to book. If you're just trying to, you know, increase your number a little bit, what Renee was doing, instead of working it all out, you have so many events booked already that we just wanted to add a couple of school carnivals. So she just emailed, I don't know how many, 20 or 30 schools, and she almost immediately got another 4 or 5 school carnivals booked without even talking to anybody, just by email. And we have
which, by the way, can I jump in on that for a second? Which, by the way, obviously, I don't think you know anybody's recommending just send an email and a bunch of people will call you.
Yeah.
But if you put yourself in the position of the person who's organizing the school carnival, they're freaking out trying to figure out how to get vendors in, right? How to get people to sponsor the games and to get people to bring bottles of water or bring cotton candy, bring you know what I mean. So they have a fundraising person or somebody who's in charge of organizing that party. And you're helping them solve a problem by bringing stuff to the thing, right? So just everybody kind of anchor that it's a big, big deal, right? These school carnivals are amazing.
Yeah. Well, and we'll go back to Professor Williams, but something I always did for years is two or three three times a year I would send a stack of 1 month free passes to the principal, PTO director, PE teacher, and say, I know you do some fundraisers during the year, silent auctions and so forth. Feel free to either use these passes, each worth $200, for those events. But also I want to send you several passes that I want you to use for kids who specifically need what we provide. In other words, they have ADD, they have mildly autistic, they have other behavioral issues that you're trying to solve. And with without regard to their socioeconomic status, is we would invite you to give them a free month pass, and if they're in need of a scholarship, we'll also work with them on that. And I would do that two or three times a year, and we would get a trickle from that. I do want everybody to keep in mind what we're talking about with Professor Williams is you go to an event and make appointments. That's the high end of the – in fact, you go to an event and you sell them something. That's the highest end. Next is you go to an event to make appointments. Next, you go to an event and collect leads. Next, you go to an event and just pass out literature of some sort. And you have to pass out an awful lot of literature to make much of a headway. But getting the leads right there is a huge improvement from that. Getting the appointments right there is a huge improvement from that. And actually getting them to pay $59 for a one-month certificate sometimes as a charitable donation or something like that is a big step from that. I remember Linda Nelson, who may be on the call, but years ago I was walking her through this, and she had a big fair. And without me having the idea, she went out and I think it was $99, sold like $129 passes. Toby, it's kind of like what you guys used to do with the shopping malls at Christmas. And so now you've got 100 people who have paid you money, and in some cases, in all cases, have an appointment right then and there. The kiosk at the shopping mall over Christmas is another iteration of that idea. But let's go back.
In 5 seconds. We're right now. I've got a bunch of folks, including my my former partner, negotiating deals with mall kiosks, and they put up a good front. But we just myself and Cindy, or whatever, an assistant, we negotiated them down 50% in 2 days. So they came at us with $6,500 for the booth in just a regular local shopping mall, $6,500 for 5 weeks. So it was the 5 weeks surrounding Christmas. We want to be there the week after. And we negotiated them down to $3,100.
Yeah.
So they're willing to work with
us. $3,100 for how long?
6 weeks.
Okay. That's certainly worth it.
Absolutely.
But let's go back, Professor Williams. Your lovely wife, Renee, has been doing a lot of this stuff. So tell us about how she's finding this event and what she's coming up with, what she's looking for.
Well, it's been by now about 2 years in the making, and now it's snowballed so much that she can do most of it just right here from her computer. But obviously, that's not how it started out, right?
Sure.
First of all, trying to find the first couple of events, and she would usually find them online or in Parent Magazine, or we just hear about them, right? Mm-hmm. And she really started contacting people right away. And she started creating relationships with some of the people that would always be involved with putting on some of these events. We have one gentleman that actually works with Peak Broadcasting that is, he's almost like Renee's buddy now, right? Because whenever there's a big event, he's going to email her and let her know. So it's actually, not at the point where this is completely self-perpetuating, right? As she finds out about some of these events. There's one, when we were at the farmer's market, one of them, we just found out it's the last farmer's market for the year, and next week there'll be a pumpkin patch, but that's not for vendors, and it's not really possible to get in there. Well, today she gets an email from the same guy that emails us about all the other events and tells us about the farmer's market and how we can get us in. Right? So it has a lot to do with building relationships, and that's what she's really gotten good at. Just like going back to the schools, it was really just creating relationships with the PTA presidents. They are inviting us now to stuff, right? So, and it's exactly right. It's exactly like you described. Now the deadline coming, they're going crazy, they're frantic, the carnival's about to happen, they got to get everybody, they have to have a lot of participation.
And we usually use the angle of face painting, which works really well. That might not be everybody's bag, but actually if anybody has some detailed questions about that and how to do it, even if you're not an artist, Renee has some, she can tell you exactly how to do it. Because sometimes we will have two or three booths simultaneously, and we'll put somebody at a booth that doesn't know how to face paint. But there's like stencil stuff, and there's kits you can get at Michael's and that kind of stuff for anybody. If you have a volunteer, you can face paint. And just, you know, if you do it for school carnival, for example, you just tell them that you donate, and you either do it for free, or a lot of times they will sell tickets, and you charge the tickets so that they make a little bit more money. So what did it work for them? But that's really how this all came about. You know, it's all a matter of her constantly contacting people, and then once you find out about one event, you go to one event, that usually leads to, you know, somebody approaching you during that event, or you're finding somebody, another vendor during the event, and you make more contact, you find out where they're going to. So it tends to then, you know, it gets easier the longer you do it. Mm-hmm. That's really, I think, the most important part to remember about that.
And I know as we kick this off, you and I talked about going to the individual city websites, Chamber of Commerce websites in your area, as well as magazines and newspapers that are aimed at parents and kids. You know, my old habit is I always just drive around the area a different way every day and go by all the I always go by the parks, the community centers, the major churches. The elementary schools, wander in, pick up their newsletters, pick up their publication, look at what's on the bulletin board. Because a lot of this stuff, you're just the first time around, you're just stumbling across it. And I'd like to give you a more scientific way to do it, but nowadays it's almost all online. And so if you know you have 10 major parks in your area, a lot of times they have events that are held. You have five or six major shopping centers in your area. They hold events. You have shopping malls. They'll hold events that you can participate in. Many of the bigger shopping centers have marketing directors. Many of the local cities and counties have somebody who you can coordinate with or talk to, or at least information on their website that you can track down. What would you add to that, Professor Williams, to track this stuff down?
Well, I think you mentioned all the pertinent ones. Yeah, really just keeping your eyes open and looking in, let's say you have a parent magazine, look in that. Because, and if you have anything that is a central communication, medium that your city uses, then go look there first. Here in Fresno, it happens to be parent magazine and, of course, online. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And just like you said, the city and county websites, that's what she looks at regularly, right? Chamber of Commerce. So those are, you know, Chamber of Commerce is always usually a good one, because even if you miss any other medium that might be popular in your city, the Chamber of Commerce is probably going to stir you right to that, right? And look for, just Google community calendar and put your city's name next to that. And even somebody who's got a relatively small event and wants to increase the size of it will probably call theirs a community calendar or have it on their website somewhere. So you're going to be able to get most of the people that have something going on that way.
Yeah.
And also, you know, like you said, driving around. I mean, who's not ever seen some signs driving around the city about some event coming up? But that's really it, and it's keeping track of it. And, I mean, the discipline part of that is making sure you keep track of it so that way the next year you already know ahead of time when it's happening without having to do that whole search over again.
You bet.
And that, Robert, two other media I think that are really useful, and I know it's, like, totally antiquated and, like, has gone the way of the dodo, but local newspapers. I mean, a lot of these guys still, you know, local newspapers set aside certain a number of column inches every issue for community involvement activities, you know, for community events. So, I mean, still local newspapers are still printing those things. And then
before you pass over that,
sure.
Especially the little bitty freely distributed in the Safeway or the grocery store, those. That's predominantly why they exist. Right?
Yeah.
So you have churches, big churches put out their own little newspaper or their own little newsletter. Community centers put out their own little publication many times. All of them have bulletin boards in the front with all the different stuff going on and have somebody you can be in communication with or a website with it on it. But, you know, if I'm in Denver Metro, the Denver Post will have some of this stuff. and I can be paying attention to it all the time. But the Arvada Sentinel, which is a little bitty free publication or, you know, cheap publication if you can find it on a newsstand, will have all of this stuff because, I mean, that's their only excuse for existence is to promote the local high school football stars and to promote the local community events and have some little, you know, crisis going on with the school board and the local government. So that's their only excuse for existing is to share that information.
Yeah, the little local weeklies, you know, are like the best. Sometimes even those little advertisers are useful. And then also, as just a media to pay attention to, which most people just kind of flip past, is almost all local cable providers have a cable access channel where it's almost all local stuff. Like in Florida, it's Channel 13. It comes on when you turn your television on. It's all local all the time. So almost every segment will have something that's happening in your local community. And as far as organizing all this stuff, you know, the most successful thing that I ever did with that was just create an Excel spreadsheet and put recurring annual events, you know, by month, sorted by month. And then I would just have it all on one master spreadsheet with my results on a column over to the right. And then I could just always look 3 months ahead and know where I'm at. So it's really easy to organize once you're there, you know?
Yeah. And going back to Professor Williams, Professor, before we go any further, you mentioned it, but let's emphasize. Because I just did a little seminar we did with YK Kim and Ashton Milroy and Kurt Bell. We did a little seminar in L.A., and I just talked to a bunch of schools in L.A. and, you know, in that vicinity. And it's really interesting. Yesterday I talked to four different ones, and they all use the same excuse with different rationale. I can't get enough traffic or I can't get people to pay anything more than I'm paying right now because I'm in Hollywood and it's a poor area, or I'm in so-and-so and it's such an affluent area that people are different in this affluent area. And I know you guys are good at marketing, but this affluent community is different. This broke community is different. This middle-class community is different. You know, I want to scream at the top of my lungs, you know, profanities. But to reemphasize for Fresno, I was seeing a study just recently, the worst hit state in the United States in the unemployment and in the recession is California, followed, I believe, by Nevada. And, of course, Detroit hasn't had a wonderful time. But the worst hit city in California, I believe, was Fresno. And so you are having to generate an awful lot of leads, an awful lot of intros to sort out the two-thirds or 80% broke people to get to the ones that have the capability. But then you're charging $400 down, $200 a month, renewing them at a 50 or 100% bump and without having any problem once you get to the right people. Is that a fair assessment?
Oh, that's totally accurate. That's totally accurate. And I think and to a large part it's just simply looking at the right side of the coin. I mean, it's really very much like you described. You know, you get, let's say, 100 people in, well, out of that, 70 or 80 are just not a good fit, right? And so you can get frustrated about that, or you can get excited that you got 30 people that were good.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's really all I care about is when the month is over, don't worry about the frustration of how many people said no, and look at the people that said yes, and look how big your class has gotten. And, you know, it's really easy to make an excuse in that way. And, heck, we're in a position that we should have made that, you know, we would be the best ones to make that excuse. And our, you know, what we resolved to do back in 2008 when this economy started going down was, all right, I guess we're giving up weekends. it was either that or, you know, just, you know, pack up, right? So, and that's really what we did is, you know, we will easily work 2 or 3 weekends out of the month, which, by the way, gets very exciting when you're getting good results.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Well, it's pitiful and depressing. If you're getting, you know, passed out 5,000 flyers and got, you know, 20 leads. But it's exciting if you made 98 appointments and your biggest problem, I mean, to be fair, is your biggest problem is that you have a time management problem because you have so much traffic coming in. You're trying to figure out how to stay on top of them all.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, take this week, for example. We have on average about 15 intros a day between Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And And of course, by Tuesday and Wednesday, there's a bunch of additional enrollment conferences. The way we do it is usually two conferences. In other words, the second visit is usually the enrollment, and we try to get both parents in, right? Mm-hmm. So if we get you in on a Monday for your first intro, we're going to try to schedule you on Tuesday for the enrollment, the latest on Wednesday for the enrollment. So by the time you get to the middle of the week, you got double-packed schedules. You still have a bunch of intros coming in, and you at the same time have a bunch of enrollment conferences. So, yes, it's absolutely a time management and a logistics problem of how do we fit them all in here and how are we going to take care of them all. And it's quick. It goes, you know, for about 3 or 4 days, and it's, you know, the 80% of what you're going to get out of this you already taken from the top. And then after that, it's a regular process of, you know, calling people, seeing if they can, if you can do a makeup for anybody that missed, sending out more letters and that kind of stuff. But for if you had a big event, the first Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is like, you know, controlled chaos, basically. And it is a matter of making sure that your regular classes don't fall apart and you don't lose your existing students while you're taking care of all this traffic. Yeah, that's right. Definitely a big part of it.
And just for everybody's edification and clarification, all of this works whether you're targeting the adult market, adult women, if you're targeting adult women, 30 to 45 for cardio kickboxing, you're targeting adult men for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or MMA, or whether you're targeting the kids market. And we're talking here predominantly about the kids market, but the same principles apply. Sometimes it'll be, you know, you're not going to go to an elementary school carnival, but you might be at a different event that has either a predominant, like the home show you talked about, Professor Williams. That works fabulous if you're looking for, like, adult women for a cardio kickboxing program or something, like one of the things that Sean Harvey does so effectively. So the principles apply all the way across. Don't get lost in the specific target market and then say, well, you know, that all looks great, but doesn't apply to me, because, you know, it does specifically apply to your
situation. Well, in fact, Mr. Alder, I think you could expand that and say that it even the elementary school model can apply to the family, to the adult market. I mean, the kids came with somebody, and it was usually a mom, right? So if I'm targeting upscale women who have, you know, who are stable in the area, who have families, who, right, that could be a good target market. You know, I think you're exactly right, though. People do tend to disqualify themselves when they see that one thing that's different. But I will tell you what, you know, I know in my area over here, around here, one of my very close business-to-business partners is a chiropractor and a relatively sophisticated owner of a chiropractic clinic. And I used to see that guy everywhere. Everywhere I went, the guy was there, you know. I would go to an elementary school thing, and he had his chiropractic thing set up. And, you know, the women would come by, and he would look at their posture and say, hey, come on over here and stand next to this thing, you know, and show them how messed up their back was, and he got a new customer, you know. So I think you're exactly right. This stuff, in principle, applies to every niche in the martial arts industry, but, frankly, any business that serves people.
Yeah. The only caveat I would have to that, one of our franchisees has – I keep redirecting him because he's out, like, trying to get to the kids market, doing adult, teaching self-defense to nurses and stuff like that. And, you know, in almost all cases, you don't have to be roundabout about this. There's the place where your audience, you know, congregates. And in some cases, it's going to be these big events that Professor Williams is talking about, where there's a lot of people, and in those environments, it's hard to sort out ahead of time the broke ones from the rich ones, from the middle class ones, the ones who are flakes from the ones who are competent. In other places, you will know if again, take the adult male Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or MMA market. You know, if you want 28 and up college-educated professionals, you know that there are some places where, you know, you don't go do the college frat house and teach them an MMA class to get the right, you know, target audience. You know you're going to get a bunch of flakes doing that. So you've got to be at least a little educated on the way in about what the audience and group is that you're looking for. And again, we have several schools that I'm sure are going to be $1 million-plus in next year that are targeting adult women or targeting adult men. I heard Eric Williams on the call earlier. They're $1 million predominantly adult male focused school now. I'm bound to determine they're going to be over $2 million next year, but it's an incredibly good audience, but you got to go where the ones that you should want are, which are the ones that are stable and professional and educated and have a reasonable income. No amount of targeting the 18 to 24-year-old crowd does you much good unless you're just purely looking for athletes. And even then, I'd rather start with them when they were 10 rather than start with them when they're 18. So, Professor, let's go back to you. Give us a sense of how you generate so many appointments at one of these events. So you're at the Home and Garden Show, and for everybody's edification, I'll say this is the same thing that we did with Kung Fu Panda, and I think we have videos and explanations and everything up the website. Toby, you'd be better at directing them to it than I would. But give us just the quick thumbnail of how they get such good results from these events.
The details on how I get them to make an appointment?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I would say two things. How you get their attention. How you get their appointment.
And that's, by the way, the right way to ask the question, because it's so common. If I look around all the other booths, doesn't matter what industry they're from, it's so common for somebody to sit on their chair behind their booth and just say hello to people when they're walking by and happen to make eye contact with you and then let them continue walking. That's obviously the first thing they have to change. You got to figure out a way to get people to slow down and stop at your booth. And there's two components to that. One is having what we use is a spin wheel. And a spin wheel that makes some good noise and is big. They don't cost much. It costs like $150. You can get a big one that has its own stand and everything, right? The other thing is goodie bags. So and goodie bags, I'll be put in them. There's like an ad card, two pieces of candy, and a small little toy. Right? And, I'd say toy and talking about something that costs less than 10 cents. Right? You can get it at Michael's. You can get it at Oriental Trading Company. Something you can buy in bulk, right? A little sticker or something small, maybe like a little plastic cheap yo-yo or something like that, right? Dirt cheap. So you have a family walking by your booth, and they would probably have just continued to walk with just glancing at you briefly, right? While they're walking by, you just hand them a goodie bag, and you hand it right to the child. Look at the child and say, here you go, it's free. And personally, that's all I do in order to get them to come in because the parent does the rest of the job for you. Because when you do that, when you just hold out a goodie bag and you tell a child, here you go, it's free, it's a goodie bag, the child sometimes doesn't know if they should take it or not. And they're waiting for a cue from the parent. And the parent, 90% of the time, will go, oh, go ahead and take it, Jimmy, it's a goodie bag. Right? So the parent kind of helps you out with that. And while you're giving the child the goodie bag, you say, oh, and by the way, you can spin the wheel if you want to. That's all you got to remember in order to get them to actually spin the wheel. Give them a goodie bag, and then right when they're taking the goodie bag, say, hey, you can spin the wheel if you want to. I don't even tell them what it's for yet, even though there's signs all over, right? We got a huge banner that says win free karate classes. Right on the spin wheel it says win karate classes, right? So while they're spinning the wheel now, I tell the parents at that moment, well, by the way, this is usually, it's an opportunity to win some karate classes. It's a fantastic opportunity if you've ever considered how your child might do in a class like this. Most parents have wondered how their child might do, and not just a karate class. Most parents wonder how their child would do in karate, how they would do in gymnastics, how they would do a music lesson, or what have you. So it's a very legitimate thought process. You say, it's a chance to see how your child might do in a program like this, and there's no commitment, no obligation. And so now they win. Everybody's a winner. It's just a matter of how much they win. And you have it either they win a free white belt test, which basically means you come twice, or it's a free week, which also means you come twice, or it's free 2 weeks, which means you come like four times, right? Depending on, it doesn't tell you about on the spin wheel the way we have it set up. But there's numbers, and then we tell you what you want. So, you got number three. That means you got 2 free weeks of karate classes, right? And at that moment, by the reaction you get, you can very much tell if that's something that they really want to do. And again, 90% of the people, they get all excited about this, right? And now I
very briefly describe the process of how we work with your child right in front of you the first two times, so that way you can see how your child responds? Okay? Again, that's something I just explained, that concept. You know, if you imagine you're a parent and I'm telling you, oh, by the way, this is, you know, what he's got is he's got 2 3 weeks of classes. And what we do the first two times is we work with him. We do it right in front of you, so that way you can get a pretty good impression if this is something that you would like to continue with or if you would like him to continue. A parent will always say, oh, okay, that sounds good. And that's the lead-in to, now, would you be able to make it to his orientation either Monday or Tuesday? And as they're looking at you thinking, then I add, on Monday I still have a 5 or a 6. On Tuesday I still have either a 6 or a 7 left. Which is, by the way, the only times I schedule. Those are the times I schedule everybody, because they happen to be the best times of the day. So I give them a little bit of a feel of scarcity, even though there is no scarcity. But I don't want to give them like 5 different options. I want to give them 2 days to pick from, and each day only have 2 time slots left in their mind, so that way they want to really book that appointment. And like I was saying earlier, about 60 to 70% of the people will book the appointments. The remainder will tell you, well, I have to check with my wife, I have to check my schedule, or whatever it is, or next week is not good, right? And then you have to do a call back with them. Is that your question, Mr. Oliver?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And why don't we do this, Toby? Is it fairly easy for people to ask questions interactively right now?
Yeah. Absolutely. All you have to do is hit star 6 on your phone, and you'll be unmuted.
Okay. Why don't we? Let them ask any questions they want of Professor Williams here in just half a second. In the meantime, Bob, are you on the line? Bob Dunn?
Bob is here. He's muted.
Okay. Can we unmute Bob?
How about now?
Hey, Bob, are you there?
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Okay.
Yeah, Bob, I've used all kinds of Oklahoma-isms to describe your situation, but I think my favorite is busier than a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest.
I just got booking a settlement for Boston, by the way. So I'm back
and forth. Yeah, good. Yeah, and as a reminder, we're going to be in Boston and in Philadelphia. We're doing Boston on Friday and taking the train or driving over to Philadelphia and doing Philadelphia on Saturday. So any of our members who live in any kind of reasonable shooting distance from either one of those should definitely be there. And this is going to be extremely valuable. But, Bob, our mission here is to let every member schedule a private one-on-one consultation with me. And the only two caveats I have for them is I'd like them to be a little prepped before we get there and prep me a little bit before we get on the phone. But you've been having mostly difficulty connecting with people because they'll go to the website and give you a phone number, then not answer their phone, or they'll call you and they get your voicemail because you're talking to somebody else. But what's the best strategy for them to connect with you, because we haven't figured out a better way than to talk live to you as a human being, to be an appointment setter for me? So give them some coaching on how to get hold of you today and how to get that time set for me before it ends up being in December or January.
Absolutely, and it's been really interesting. When the calls do come in, they seem to come in flurries. So, while I'm on the phone, 5 calls will come in while I'm on that phone. So the best thing for anybody to do, and I am still, I make every effort to get back with everyone, is to be sure to do leave a message, leave your name, and the best number to reach you at. And I will definitely get back with you and fill in the calendar for you to chat with for all of us.
Yeah, and I would say with today's technology, if they leave a mobile number so that if you can't catch them immediately, at least you can text them and figure out a time that you two can talk on the phone. And, you know, given how tight my scheduling is it's important that they talk to you as quickly as possible to get that time, and then there's typically going to be a little bit of a delay to give them time to, you know, as I would request, go through the book and go through the online video and give me a little bit more information, because I hate to go in these calls cold if I can have as much information about what their needs and opportunities are as possible ahead of time.
Yes, sir. Yeah, and I try to explain that to everybody because and this is a great opportunity for everyone to have a chance to speak with you directly and to make that phone conversation that much more productive. By them giving you that information, you're absolutely right. It will help them tremendously and you on the call as well.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah. Okay, so let's go into some questions for Professor Williams or anybody else for this.
Hello?
Yes,
you're
go right in.
This is Runako Mashama and Erki Mashama.
Hey, Sophie, how you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
Hi.
All right. I got invited to my daughter's school to speak to the class as a community leader on what we do in the community to assist in the community. And I'd like to know any ideas that I can use to maximize this opportunity so I can also get intros and appointments from this opportunity.
I'll hand that off to Professor Williams. Professor Williams, what would you say to do to maximize that?
Well, there's several things you can do. At the very, very least, I would definitely schedule the classroom visit and make sure you get the information of all the kids. Get some kind of a registration sheet, and if they ask, if a teacher asks you why you need that, you just say it's for insurance purposes. Right? I would expand out to that. So let me ask you this: you said you got invited, right?
Yes. It was part of my daughter. She had a community project to do, and she interviewed me, and then did a homework on the interview. And after that, the teacher invited me to come and speak to the kids in the class on what we do in the community.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. Well, hang on just a minute. Sorry about that. That's an invitation to really expand, right? If they ask me what you do in the community, the answer should be as well. We're helping children do a whole lot better at school. We have a ripple effect to the entire community. We make sure that children become more responsible at home. And let me give you an idea of how we do it. And then you get basically, and you talk a little bit about maybe the Bully Buster program or Stranger Danger program, an empowerment program, and you basically make sure that they know that what you do is you help the school and you help the community. So that way, first of all, you really define what it is that you can do because they define you poorly, right? In other words, they think you just teach them to kick and to punch, right?
Right.
So that's the first thing. I would definitely make sure I get I talk to the – if you really want to expand on this, this could lead into a program with the entire school. So if you're looking for opportunities like that, I would work that angle. I would sit down with the teacher ahead of time. I would also ask to sit down with the principal at the same time, and I would let them know that you can go from classroom to classroom or work with the entire school, not simultaneously, but maybe like all the first graders and all the second graders, all the third graders, do maybe like a six-visit thing or something like that where you can get much more involved with all meet all the parents and everything. I would try to expand out from that. I would definitely recommend don't just go in there, do one little lecture to the kids, and then leave. That would be a complete waste of time. And, number one, go ahead.
Before you go further, let me expand on that real quick. You know, the part of what this is it's the thing that a lot of the industry has started to call school talks. And what the fallacy of the way that a lot of people have been taught, what was, my idea from the, all the way back to 1985, I think, is if you go in, you want to teach them a class, not lecture whenever possible. And you want to get them actively participating. Doesn't matter whether there's, 20 kids or 200 kids. The next thing you want to remember is that martial arts demonstrations don't do much. Actually teaching a first intro to a group of people to show them that they would be good students is very valuable. Number three is none of this stuff does a very, very effective job of creating students if you don't end up with at least name, address, phone number, email address, some level of permission to contact them. And our solution for that, again, 20-some years later, was always what we call permission slips. So, you know, parents in elementary are used to filling out permission slips for kids to go places, and so now we're doing a permission slip for them to actively participate in a class. And so, again, whether it's one class of 30 kids or it's the entire school, and one class of 30 kids is a marvelous way to get your foot in the door, to do what my version of this was always not called school talk. We called it gym teacher for the day because we would go in and teach all of the elementary schools or all of the gym classes in the school over 1, 2, or 3 days with permission slips ahead of time. And the permission slips can be simple as, parents' name, address, phone number, email address, a little checkbox at the bottom. All the kids who participate will get a free month of lessons. If you'd like to learn more about that, check here and we'll contact you. And then all of them can get direct mail. You want to be careful about telemarketing to everybody because that's a sure way nowadays to get yourself not invited back next year. Toby, what would you add to that explanation?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, if the kids are absent of the parents, which is what I'm assuming, getting the data ahead of time is the most effective. You know what I mean? And it's always the most effective. If the kids are there in the presence of the parents, then it's move into appointment setting mode. You know, so if they're there right then and there, you give them a reason to want to take advantage of something today, you know, and have them go to the back of the room or walk over to your thing or, you know, whatever, and set their appointment to do whatever it might be immediately, you know. But I'm assuming you're in the absence of the parents. So data and then follow-up is probably the best you can do. The only other thing I think that I would think of is how you can empower the school administrators to help you with the thing, right? So in a lot of cases, you can really get them on your team. I remember there's a private school out by me called St. Peter's that I did a lot of work with when I was running these schools every day. And, you know, I really got their crew on my side. You know, they were their kind of, you know, they really wanted to help me. So they actually were like, you know, they would do the announcement on the PA speaker in the morning, you know, the thing that they were going to do that night, and, you know, make sure that the slips were filled out and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So, I mean, if you can get them to engage with you, that's useful. And in some cases, they'll just take permission to give you the list of the students, you know, to give you, like, the student roster or whatever they call it, the school directory, you know. I think those are probably the two things that I would think of.
Good. Go ahead.
I already had the appointment. It is on Friday between 8:30 and 9 p.m. I mean, sorry, and 9 a.m. That's the day the teacher gave for me to come in.
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, if you can get permission slips quickly, that will help dramatically. Certainly giving them all out passes, and you have a special time on Saturday morning for all the kids to come down to the martial arts school to take a special class. That's good, but it's going to be much lower results than if you can get name, address, phone number, and have some ability to proactively follow up with them as well.
All right.
Let's
go to another question before we run out of time. So does somebody else have a quick question before we're out of time today? No question.
Hi, it's Jonathan Metcalf.
Hey, Jonathan.
Hi, let's say you do a school program like that or a church program or whatnot. What's an appropriate amount of follow-up that you guys find is enough that it's as effective as possible, but not so much you don't get invited back? How do you balance it out?
Well, as you're alluding to, it is a tough balance, and you don't want to do so little follow up you don't get any results. And if you get to so little follow up you don't get any results, whether you get invited back next year becomes semi-irrelevant, right? And right. So, but on the other hand, the you've got to be aware of what parents are going to be sensitive to, and you're also got to be aware of how much permission you have. And so, I think the first thing is it's I much prefer when the parents are giving us permission, as opposed to I'm coming up with the school directory or the school is giving me the names, although I like them to do that. The second thing is it seems like nowadays what annoys people in order of their level of annoyance, I guess, is a way to say it, is getting a phone call at dinner hour. And so, you know, the I'm most sensitive to outbound telemarketing, and I'm least sensitive to direct mail. And I think that email is if you look at calling them with a live human being, that's what if they don't really feel like they gave you permission to do it, they get most annoyed. Next on the list is text messaging and email. Lowest on the list is direct mail. So rarely have I ever had any blowback from an avalanche over a period of time of direct mail. Frequently, I've had blowback from just cold telemarketing to people who didn't feel like they gave us permission and or being insensitive to when we called and or having somebody who's not particularly good on the phone. You know, I always want to be, you know, hi, Mrs. Jones, you know, I've already taught Billy a class today at Leewood Elementary. I noticed one of the things you had requested is some additional information about the program. Wanted to check and see if this was a good time to give you some additional information. If not, when would be a good time to do that? Right, so if you have somebody who's got good telephone rapport skills and so forth, there's less likely to be blowback if you just put, you know, random mom on the phone without a little bit of training. There's going to be. And there is another thing buried in there. I remember one time we had 200 kids we were trying to follow up on, and I recruited the sister-in-law. And because she's just another mom, had no sales skills whatsoever, I could coach her along. And she decided that her husband, who she thought was a good salesman, should do it because she didn't have any sales skills. And I quickly had to intervene because I didn't want somebody who thought of themselves as a good salesman. I wanted another mom, and even better from the same school, that's going to talk to him like a mom, who could say, hi, this is Heidi, and, you know, I know that Billy was at Leewood today with this program, Mile High Karate. You had checked some information. You know, I know my 7-year-old daughter is really enthusiastic about it. Wanted to find out if this is a good time to give you some information about it. You know, it's a much better approach than put some 32-year-old guy who thinks he's a slick salesperson on the phone, because that's sure to not have good rapport with him. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense.
So I don't know if that's a thorough answer. It's just it is a balancing act. And, you know, I've seen some of our guys get so sensitive about there being blowback that they end up doing a lot of activity for no results. That's mm-hmm. not good. On the other hand, I've seen others be so aggressive in trying to, you know, get everybody on the phone and everything and putting the wrong person on the phone, that it ends up having some negative effect on balance. I'd rather have somebody too aggressive than not aggressive enough, but you do have to be careful.
Yeah, we've walked that line. We're like, do not enough, and then because it's easier, and then we get pissed off, we got no results, and then we do too much. So,
yeah, well, and it's part of why you have to keep really good stats mm-hmm. and to know what your results look like from time to time. And it's also why you have to just have you know what Robin, so the NLP guys would call sensory acuity. You've got to be just aware of what's going on enough to know when to back off a little bit or when to get a little bit more aggressive. And, Jonathan, one of the things we saw at the Inner Circle meeting last is, I mean, you have this fabulous direct mail campaign and follow-up. And, you know, I occasionally but rarely have I ever gotten anybody who's upset about getting fabulously educational material by direct mail. And so the more the material looks educational and the more you're following up aggressively by direct mail, the less likely you are to have the I'm getting spam in my email and I'm getting somebody calling me a dinner or blowback type of stuff.
Right.
Hey, Jonathan, while we have you on the phone, we've had several of our members looking at and thinking about and pondering the Peak Performers Group. Well, what's your experience been now a couple years later in going through Peak Performers Inner Circle? What would you share with them on how to think about that?
Well, I was foolish enough to not join Peak Performers when I needed it, and I just went right to Inner Circle when I needed that. So I kind of spent 10 years fumbling my way to get to the point where I was at that level, and I probably could have spent 2 or 3 years if I had joined Peak Performers at the right time. So here's the funny experience. Every person I've ever met walks into the Inner Circle meeting, and they could have, you know, like we were just talking about Eric Williams or any of these guys who come in, and they have these enormously successful businesses already. And the first meeting is always the same. Their jaws are on the table going, oh, my God, I can't believe I wasn't here 5 years ago. I have so much to learn. You know, and a year later, they're the guys presenting the information as jaw-dropping, because it really is jaw-dropping, like the amount of knowledge in that room and sort of the things you don't know is massive. It's like there's two or three stories I tell about, you know, coaching things that you or Toby have provided for me that just were, you know, when you tell the story, you kind of slap yourself in the forehead, and I like your expression, blinding flash the obvious. But what I
stole that from Tom Peters.
What's that?
I stole that from Tom Peters, who I think stole it from somebody else. But
okay.
Incredible.
Well stolen.
Yeah.
And it's true. My experience of the program is that you don't know what you don't know, and you can save yourself a whole lot of time and aggravation, and it's fun. I mean, honestly, it really is fun. I'm looking forward to the November meeting and being with the guys and sort of going, oh, yeah, you know what, I've been brilliant about that, and I've been an idiot about that. Thanks for helping me be brilliant, and what can I do about this idiocy? So I always look forward to meetings. It's always fun to know where I'm in, when I'm heading the right direction and when I'm not.
From the standpoint of the, you know, two of the key elements that are different from just being a member, since everybody on the call is a member, it really isn't about more stuff. Would you agree with that? It's about the one-on-one coaching, and it's about the mastermind effect. Which of those do you think you find more valuable, and how would you describe what each of those pieces really are all about?
Well, I don't know. I couldn't describe one as more valuable than the other because they provide very different things. So I in the Inner Circle program, I have the fortune to be on the phone with Master Oliver once a month, and that's where I have that burning question, like, am I doing this right, or gosh, I'm getting results here, they're X, and I'd like them to be 3X, what can I do? And that's what my private call often alludes to. And then for the mastermind group, it offers two things. One, it offers a sounding board for new ideas that you're not really at the point where you have a burning question about it yet. You're sort of in exploration mode, and you want to know, okay, well, I'm thinking about doing this, and I know I want to go in this direction, but I'm not. Hey, great. I'm not quite there yet. So it provides that, and the other thing that it provides that I didn't join the program for, because it's not something I normally think I need, is validation. Because I know if I'm trying something new, or anybody's trying something new, they do it with a little bit of hesitancy because they're not sure, is this the right thing? And gosh, and they put it off and stuff like that. But when I have 8 people saying, oh, yeah, I've been there, done that, here's 3 mistakes to avoid, here's 2 things you definitely want to do when you do it, and here's 2 things that seem like something you want to do but you don't, it gives you a different level of confidence when you approach, you know, something you were going to do anyway. And so even if you're the kind of person who likes to figure it out on your own, if there's 8 people who told you, well, we like to figure it out on our own too, but here's what we figured out, that just gives you a different level of confidence when you approach something new and tends to eliminate procrastination as much as possible.
Yeah, I might add 2 things, and correct me if this isn't your view, but you know, in my experience with whether Jay Abraham or Dan Kennedy or with June Rhee and with Nick Okinas, is part of my reaction, and I'll just say it out loud, is always been, well, that guy isn't any smarter than I am.
Yeah.
And he's kicking my ass in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that he's in a better location. It's not that he has more resources. It's not that he's smarter than I am. It's just that he's doing it. And it was perhaps always the most valuable thing to me, is it was the ultimate excuse eliminator. Because you could sit across the table and know, it's not that they're better educated, not that they're smarter, not that they were born with a silver spoon in their mouth, they were just going and doing it. And it always moves me to action to be in a room like that with people to see what they were doing. Is that a fair thing to say?
I think that's more than fair. I mean, I think anyone can read a book about, how Bill Gates made billions of dollars, and very few people are going to be able to do that from reading his book. And on the other hand, if we all got in a room with a bunch of guys like that,
yeah. We'd
start to realize, hey, they're just guys, and their thinking starts to rub off on us, and our belief that there's this mythical being, out there somewhere, that they're somehow not like us, gets destroyed, and just sort of say, hey, you know what, they are just like me.
Yeah. The second thing I've always found is in our group, the thing that if it's outside the industry, the problem is then translating it into our business and putting it in. But in our group, everybody is running a martial arts school or a chain of martial arts schools, but there's enough diversity that, like at our last meeting, nobody in the room was as good at direct mail follow-up as you were. On the other hand, nobody was as good at generating traffic online as Hein Nguyen and Eric Williams, and nobody, I think, had made better progress on fixing their online situation than Joe Borucki. And we could keep going through the list. I don't think anybody in the group were better than Sasha Williams at generating people through events and activities and just brute force labor. And so there's enough diversity that no matter what you're good at, there's three or four other people who are good at different things. And it shows you how you can really step up the plate and get much better results.
Absolutely.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that's why it's fun. Just because
if
I was in the room and I felt like I didn't know anything, which is honestly I think how I felt the first meeting, because there was just so much good new information. And then as I started to share, people were saying, "Oh no, that's good," and I stopped believing that they were patronizing me, because I realized, hey, you know what, I did do some things well, but I think the first couple of meetings, a lot of people feel like, oh my gosh, these guys are on a different level. And then you realize within a meeting or two, no, actually, you know what, they're on a different level for some things, but we're very much on the same level for other things. It's great to contribute and be contributed to.
And I will say, there is a 3 or 4 month period where you can either be confused or maybe even feel neglected and not really have your sea legs about the things. It's the same as your average white belt coming into a martial arts school. And, in your case, I've watched your growth, but 6 to 9 months later, you had fabulous results. But, what was your emotional reaction the first 90 days?
I was a little overwhelmed, honestly. I felt excited that there are people out there who were smarter. I'm one of those guys who likes to meet people who are smarter than I am, because, I'm pretty cocky and I think I'm pretty smart. So when I meet people out there like Toby and you who just are smarter, know more, have thought it through better, I find that really exciting and I get motivated by it. But that being said, I walk home with, 45 pages of notes and, 108 to-do things. And what I learned, by the later meetings is, okay, don't do that. Take 5 pages of notes and 12 to-do things. So I was pretty overwhelmed and excited at the same time, because I knew, okay, there's 1,000 possibilities in front of me. I've got a menu of things that I can now engage in with much more expertise. I just got to pick one and go with it. So that was my first experience, was just knowing that there was so much possibility, so much opportunity, and it was a little overwhelming.
Well, and ultimately, our one-on-one follow-up calls combined with our interactions by email or fax or whatever tends to narrow in that to-do list. To really what the immediate opportunity is, rather than the list of a ton of things to do.
And there were several times when you were helpful to me and say, "Well, Jonathan, I know that's what you're attracted to doing that, but you already do that well. Do this instead, because it's going to make more of a difference for your money." And then I had a choice about whether to listen or not. And when I did, it was always the right choice.
Jonathan, we're struggling to get all the members to take advantage of the month I set aside to do one-on-one calls. What would you tell them about whether that's a valuable opportunity or not?
Well, I mean, it depends. If you'd like to go outside and leave $1,000 of your money on the curb, then I recommend you don't make do the phone call. If you're the kind of person who likes to, you know, benefit with it, and I know that sounds really condescending, but on the other side of this, having, you know, getting to have those coaching calls and those opportunities where I see the other side of it and go, how valuable it is, I can't imagine why you wouldn't, except for if you're just, it's just something you've never done before, so you wouldn't be inclined to do it. But really, there's, you know, call me on my school, it's 860-698-9226, if you'd like to find out, you know, my personal experience, you know, not on a big teleconference, in case you think that's going to affect what I say. But just get on the phone with Mr. Oliver and hear what he has to say. If you like it, go ahead and take advantage of it. If you have no interest in what he says, then don't. But I think he's well-recognized enough in the field that it really makes sense if he's offering that pretty good on the phone.
You know, I think for some people, they're, you know, operating in their comfort zone and don't think there's any room for growth particularly. And for others, there's an embarrassment factor. I mean, I've talked to people who are, you know, $85,000 in arrear on their lease or working on renegotiating their lease and restructuring their business. And the thing for everybody to remember is I haven't yet talked to anybody who is worse off than I've been at the worst stage. I haven't yet dealt with anybody who's dealing with a crisis that I haven't had to fix years ago, and many times when I was 23, 24 years old. So, you know, you should get over the embarrassment factor if you're struggling, and on the other end, if you're doing $500,000 a year and feel comfortable and feel like everything's clicking along, the reality is there are ways to simplify your operation, to make it more profitable, and probably double the net profit with a few tunes and tweaks. So at both ends of the spectrum, I think sometimes people either have an embarrassment factor or they have a comfort level that they need to get over. But hey, Jonathan, I appreciate your time, and we're about 8 minutes over our allotted time. Toby, anything to add? I know we all appreciate Professor Williams' contribution. We all appreciate your contributions, Jonathan. And I just want to urge everybody on to ask questions either by email or on the discussion board or on these calls. That's what they're there for.
Yeah, you know,
Toby,
you know the only thing I don't have anything of value to add other than one thing. Everybody, give yourself a pat on the back. This call has been the most attended call that we've had from Maximum Impact members in the last 7 months. So everybody, big pat on the back, good work. Hopefully we can get everybody, continue to have more and more, have these calls be more and more and more productive for everybody and larger and larger attendance. So good work.
Well, let me make one prediction. There's an awful lot of people who 2 or 3 hours later or a day or two later are going to be confused about how to implement all the stuff that we're talking about. And rather than be frustrated, go to the discussion board. And we'll all be actively participating and helping you do that. And two, is make sure you get that one-on-one call, because anything that's sometimes it's still just the last little under 5% understanding that keeps you from having an extra 50 or 100 intros this month. And I can you know walk you through that, and in some cases 30 minutes or less, or you know 5 minutes or less on how to fix that. So I will leave it with that comment. But thank you, Master Milroy, and thank you, Professor Williams, and thank you, Jonathan, and everybody else. And we look forward to our Keystone Retreat coming up in about a month. It's just a fabulous venue and going to be fabulously productive with a focus on high-quality student service, retention, and renewals. So thanks to everybody.